How you doing, Ed?
Not bad. How's it going with you?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. We haven't spoken quite a long time now.
Yeah, it's probably the best. I think it's just the best my life's ever been going, Ben.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
That's a lovely start to the year, isn't it?
How was your January?
Yeah, not bad. Nothing too much going on in January, I feel. Other than that, the fact that I have noticed, if you want to try and do something in January, you just do it and then you say it's something you are-y. So like vegan, you are-y.
Oh, yeah. And some of them are just a real stretch, aren't they?
Yeah, some of them really are. But have you taken on any sort of resolution or bettering yourself?
I have, and I hate myself for it because I always complain about these resolution things and like, you know, doing things on Valentine's Day just because it's Valentine's Day and just doing resolutions because it's the new year. It's like, if you're going to do something, just do it. But anyway, I did it anyway because I'm a hypocrite. Yeah, decided to exercise more and meditate more.
And how's that going for you?
Well, here's the thing, right? I thought the more I did, the better. So in 1 week, I went from just being couch potato computer scientist to... In 1 week, I think I did two and a half K runs. I thought, yeah, well, I'm about to a 5K run. I went rock climbing a couple of times and did yoga about 3 times. And then the following week, I was just destroyed.
That'll happen.
And I thought that old exercise malarkey's not for me.
Yeah, you've got to be real careful with that. You can't just jump into it, you know, all guns blazing.
I was couched to 5K, but in 1 day, you know.
I don't know if it's actually couch to 5K then. It's just called doing a 5K, isn't it?
It's like, get up, off the couch, do a 5K.
Yeah, exactly. Easy. Anything else, though, other than the usual ones?
No. Did you?
Well, I did tell you, I did mention briefly at the start of the year, that I'd started using an app to track my mood.
Yeah, but see, you like to track everything.
And you had some thoughts about that. I do, actually, yeah, I do like to track everything. But yeah, you had some thoughts about that. What's your first impression of me doing that?
I think it's good. I think if you're someone who like maybe isn't aware of like the way you're feeling a lot of the time. So like, I don't know. You might look back on the month and think, yeah, it's been all right. But then maybe people close to you have been like, oh, you've been a little bit down recently. Maybe it takes that to realize like, oh, yeah, I have been. But then again, I think it's over. I think like, I just think you can over-track these things. So like, you know, you've got like MyFitnessPal to track your calories.
Yeah.
I would rather just follow some very simple rules, like only have whole foods, only don't like have refined stuff. And then, yeah, that's it. Instead of tracking every single calorie, I think it's kind of too far the other way.
So I kind of disagree a little bit in that, at least with the MyFitnessPal thing, I can see genuine use in that because the data that you collect in MyFitnessPal is proper quantifiable, right? It's harsh numbers. You can't argue with the numbers in the app. But the mood thing, I mean, I've been doing it. Let's have a look now. So I've been doing it on an app called Dailyo, which I think is cross-platform. It's free. It does have a premium version. So by default, you can add as many moods as you want. But to me, it only really makes sense if you've got a scale, albeit... See, I don't even know, really. Yeah, so you've got a scale of moods. Let's have a look.
Yeah, because it's got to be relative. Because like you judging yourself, your own mood is going to be different to someone else.
Yeah. So it's got a scale of moods. So the moods that are by default are rad is the best mood you can be in, which is, yeah, exactly. Good, neutral, bad, and awful. And I'm finding it really, really difficult because, like I say, with the MyFitnessPal thing, it's very much you scan your food and there's no arguing with it. But there's some days where, I don't know, I don't really feel rad, good, neutral, bad, or awful. I feel like, I don't know, I don't even know what I'd class myself as. So it's quite good to reflect on in that respect because you sometimes you just stop yourself and go, well, I don't really feel anything right now. I don't really...
Yeah.
And in which case, I just use neutral, but it doesn't feel right saying neutral.
I reckon the value there then isn't in the tracking of the mood. It's the fact that tracking your mood requires you to kind of reflect on how you've been feeling.
Yeah.
And doing that is what's useful.
So in that case, I normally just put neutral, but I feel like whenever I put neutral, I feel like, right, well, if I'm neutral right now, what's going on? Why aren't I better or why aren't I more productive or something?
Every time we record, is this a nice streak of rads? You're like, yeah, I feel pretty rad after talking to Ed.
I haven't tracked it that far, so we'll find out this evening when I put my mood in.
I'm looking at, oh yeah, I want some updates on your mood.
The other thing is as well is you can put in activities that you do alongside the mood. So you can kind of like track what activities cause what behaviours. And there are a lot of stats, but
So, Ben, what have you done that has made you feel pretty rad?
Well, I did. So, if I look at my year stats here, let's have a look. My year stats, yearly statistics. I've only had one. I've had two instances of rad.
Two isolated instances.
Yeah. And I've been tracking it since about the 5th of January. 40 instances of good and 23 instances of neutral. And a couple of instances of bad and awful. And those were mostly in the last few weeks when we were travelling, because I'll get onto that in a minute, but it was...
You see, what I'm imagining here, you say you've had two instances of being rad. You've always had a very dry sense of humour, yeah. Which makes me think, like, you're in the rad mood, you're like, oh, I don't know about this. This is a bit much for me. I'll go back to being neutral for a while.
No, not quite. So the rad ones were when I was skiing last week, which, again, I'll get into in a minute, but... Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what I'm meant to get from this. I think it's quite useful to pick up on when you're just feeling neutral. I mean, and pick yourself up and say, well, what? Because it's pretty obvious when you're having a crap day, and you know you're having a crap day. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But I think it's most useful to pick yourself up when you're having a neutral day, when you don't really feel anything. It's like, well, right, well, you should be doing something with your day. Your day should be heading in a positive direction. You can have a bad day and just write it off as a bad day. But if you're having a neutral day, I think it's more important to try and send it in a good direction than if you're having a bad day and you just assign to write the whole thing off.
Yeah, because I think if you're having a bad day, there's usually a reason for it. Mm. But a neutral day, it's like that means you're not doing something to make yourself be rad.
Well, yeah, I might have to rename that. I don't like rad anyway. And then also you can mark your activities, so things like programming, good meal, skiing, relaxing, cycling, shopping, travel, dog walk, that sort of thing.
And then you could be like, I need to incorporate that more into my life.
Yeah, because I think it does some sort of thing where you can see what activities, you know, increase, associated with certain moods.
What was it for you? Was it doing the dishwasher or something? There was some weird mundane task you liked.
Oh, well, if I'm going to do any housework, I do like doing the loading the dishwasher and that sort of thing. Or loading the... I always get the two mixed up. I always say that the washing machine... Because both machines wash, right? I don't understand why people are so picky about this. Both machines wash things, right? Be it clothes or plates. Everyone knows. If I'm in the kitchen and say, oh, you're going to pop that in the washing machine, and people just go, what? Do you mean the dishwasher? And it's like, well, yeah, I obviously mean the dishwasher. It's the washing machine that lives in the kitchen.
I mean, if you had Alzheimer's, I'd understand, but yeah.
So yeah, mood tracking. I'm not really sure. I'm not sold on it yet. I think I'm going to probably try and do it until the end of February.
And that's your resolution, is it?
At the moment, yeah. I'm quite open to changing. I quite like the idea of resolutions, and because, you know, it's a good time to start a new streak of doing something. And I've spoke before about how I think it's important to have a streak if you want to enforce any behaviour. Because if you don't maintain the streak, there's just no motivation to keep doing it.
And it's a simple mental thing, which, you know, it's pleasing to keep that chain going, isn't it? It's just a little...
Yeah. I can't foresee myself doing it in the long run. I don't know if I'll get much out of it. I don't feel like I'm getting a load out of it right now. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know.
Well, Ben, now you have the message. You may hang up the phone, you know?
Yeah.
You've been feeling rad. You need to concentrate on those rad moments.
But yeah.
I tell you what, though. I've been doing a lot more meditation, right? But one thing I really don't like is... these wishy-washy guided meditations. So, like, I've always been a very scientific person, and meditation tends to attract the more spiritual type. So there's, like, these guided meditations, and they'll start, like... I'm sure I've talked to you about this before, like, when I did yoga and stuff. And I say, right, we're going to start with three shanties.
What is a shanty? Whoa.
I don't know, Ben. I don't know what a shanty is.
Oh, come on, you've got to know what a shanty is.
I know a sea shanty. We certainly weren't singing pirate songs, I tell you that.
Not quite the same thing.
We just said shanty three times.
Is there a crossover in the meditation and ASMR community?
I don't think so.
It just strikes me as a kind of Venn diagram which collides.
I reckon some guided meditations people probably do get ASMR from, but I don't think, yeah, that is like, that's not what you aim to get from it.
Do you understand the whole ASMR thing?
Yeah, I get it.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't at all. It just annoys me. And again, I think we spoke about this before, but it just winds me up listening to those noises.
Yeah, and it cracks me up when other people find it cringeworthy. I can see how they can find it. And some of them are just overtly sexual, and it's like, okay, this feels like I shouldn't be on the internet.
Yeah, there's a lot of grown women just whispering into microphones. That's all it seems to be to me. And like,
yeah, and like licking a microphone. It's like, okay.
I don't understand what people get out of it, but it's clearly just because it doesn't work for me whatsoever. So I just find it really irritating. And you know when people are like whispering, I'm just like, speak up, I can't hear, Christ. But yeah, the meditation's been going well for you then. Do you find it helps?
Yeah.
How long do you do it for at a time?
How long do I do it for?
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing like an 8-week mindfulness course with this book. So they start you off doing like 2 5-minute ones a day. And then now I'm on doing 2 15-minute ones a day.
Mm.
And they say, if you say you haven't got enough time to do it, then you need to do it even more.
Oh, God. Groan.
People often find that doing meditation gives them more time in their day.
Oh, wow.
Because we are time travellers.
Well, yeah, the less said, the better about that, perhaps, from me. But
I got an email, actually, asking if I wanted to genuinely rebalance my chakras.
See, that's the thing for me, is that it's so closely knit with this woo community that I just...
Yeah, and I mean, I've looked at the science behind meditation. There's some, like, physiological changes in the brain. I know it's very hard to do, you know, self-reported mood changes, but they've been very good. And just anecdotally, it's worked very well for me. But people start talking about feeling one with the earth, they're quiet to me.
Difficult, striking that scientific, non-scientific balance.
Are they suggesting my chakras aren't in balance?
What on earth is a chakra?
Well, you got 7 chakras, haven't you, Ben?
Oh, God.
You got one in your head, and it's just going to line down the body. Okay. All different chakras.
Right, okay.
And if you ever have any discomfort in your life or suffering,
yeah,
it means chakras are out of whack.
That's a nightmare. Who'd you call a plumber to solve that, or what?
No. I mean, if you're putting your mood down and it's not rad, one of your chakras is off.
Yeah, I'm just imagining some tradesman just coming in and shaking his head, looking at you, going, "You got a chakra out of alignment there. Ooh, that's going to cost you. That's going to cost you.
Can't repair that. That's going to be a total replacement of that chakra." Yeah.
Don't worry though, I can buy them at trade price. It'll be a bit cheaper.
I'm getting from China. I can't guarantee I'll get you in time, but 5 weeks will get you a brand new chakra.
Oh dear. So after you've finished a meditation session, how do you actually feel? Do you feel like good? Do you just feel refreshed? Do you feel like you've just woken up? What is it?
Yeah, so like I would say the best way I can describe it, it's a bit like a hangover, but not like a drunk hangover. So it's like when you're doing meditation, you're focusing on the present moment, and you usually got a focal point, and that can be your breath or senses in your body or sound. So I think that's a name for it. It's a certain kind of meditation where there's a focal point. And the point is you're trying to make yourself in the present moment, and every time a thought or something takes you away, you're supposed to notice that and bring yourself back. And so that's during the meditation. But I find afterwards, your brain is in that process of maintaining being in the present moment. And the idea is that any form of suffering, worries about the future, regrets about the past, being sad. And so by being in the present moment only, you are naturally enjoying yourself. So after you've had the meditation, there's a bit of a hangover of being in the present moment.
Mm.
So it's just kind of trying to... It's a bit like if you practice running, whilst you're running, you're improving your practicing, you're running a lot. But, you know, you'll probably find it easy to walk around throughout the day anyway.
Yeah.
Because of that.
It sounds really difficult in a way as well. It's like that thing, you know, I think it's a common internet thing where people will just comment saying, you are now breathing manually. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
If you actually focus on not thinking about anything, it's really difficult.
It's true. You're not trying to think about nothing. You're trying to think about a thing and only that thing. And your
Which
brain
is your
will
breathing,
be like,
right?
Yeah, so I was sat down the other day and, you know, I've got like a meeting about my dissertation. So I was sat there trying to focus on my breath. Just, you know, imagine it going in and out. And suddenly my brain goes, oh, what about the dissertation? And you think, I'm not supposed to be doing that. And you bring your mind back and start thinking about breathing again.
But even that sounds quite difficult, just focusing on breathing and casting aside these thoughts. I guess that's the whole point.
It is, but it gets the more you do it, the easier it gets. So, like, oftentimes you'll be thinking about that distraction for about a minute before you realise, you know, oh God, and you bring it back. But it gets easier and easier.
Do you ever find yourself falling asleep doing it? Is that a thing?
Occasionally, but like they talk about this in books. They say like, really, what that's telling you, if you're falling asleep when you're trying to meditate, it means you're not getting enough sleep. So they say, if you are feeling falling asleep, just, you know, feel free to drift off for a bit. But as I take it as a reminder that, you know, that's a sign you need to get more sleep. So it's kind of just all about listening to your body, Ben.
Do you do it like in the, you know, if Hollywood were to portray someone meditating, they do it cross-legged, sat on a cushion or something like that. Yeah. Is that what you do?
I do, yeah. Okay. That's what most people do.
I'd find that really hard to fall asleep, actually, if I was sat upright. I find that really difficult.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. So, like, you're supposed to, like, have an upright...
Yeah.
It's almost active upright posture.
Mm. But I know, like, in yoga, and you do yoga as well, don't you? But I know in yoga, right at the end, don't you do something similar to meditating where you focus on your breath? And apparently a lot of people fall asleep doing that.
Yeah, they usually, like, just to finish off, people do, like, 3, 4, 5 minutes of meditation.
Okay. Interesting. I can't see myself doing it at any time soon. I know you and I have spoke about this at length.
Yeah. Because I remember I was like, I know a few years ago, I was annoyed that you didn't want to try it.
Do you understand where I'm coming from, though?
I think so, but I think it's one of those things that you don't really realise what it's kind of like until you try it.
Yeah. I just... And you also hear about, like, all these successful people, and they all take time out to meditate and be mindful and all this stuff, and it, I don't know, it just seems like...
But then kind of, I think meditating for an ulterior motive, like trying to increase creativity and stuff, is kind of missing the point.
Because
the point is kind of not to strive for anything. You're supposed to be kind of doing it for the sake of doing it. Yeah. But I mean, I asked this guy, because I went to a local Zen Buddhist center, as one does.
Oh, blimey, okay.
And I asked the guy, I was like, he was explaining how you're not supposed to intend to achieve anything. You're supposed to do it. And I was like, we're all here because we're having problems, or we want to improve our practice. How can we sit down without an intention? He goes, well, you have to start with an intention. And they said, the more you do it, the more it becomes just kind of your natural way of being. So you don't actually intend to sit down or meditate. You just do it.
Yeah. But the thing about that though, is you still have to, because modern life is the way it is. You still have to set some time aside for it, right? You can't just, automatically, oh, it's my time to meditate, I'm going to sit down and do it. You still have to put some time aside and actively think about the act of meditating, right?
Yeah, and it becomes a goal and an intention, doesn't it?
Which is, in my mind, counter to what that guy just said then.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I was saying to him, basically. So he says, it's inevitable. You have to start out like that. But he said, hopefully, eventually, it'll just become a kind of natural way of being. Yeah, today.
Difficult.
But yeah, I'd recommend it to anyone.
Maybe I'll try it at some point and I'll report back.
I can imagine you finding it funny, yeah.
I think I find it really difficult more than anything. I think that would be my major struggle with it. But who knows? Watch this space. Okay, just a quick one, Ed. Real quick. This is going to be a quick segment. Okay, everyone, quick segment.
Yeah.
So on our street, right, just so the listeners know, every week on Bin Day, you and I, we celebrate the fact that it's Bin Day,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
We'll talk about the fact that it's Bin Day. It's a great day. It's a great day. You get rid of stuff that you don't need. What a joyous occasion.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here's a question related to Bin Day. On our street, as you'll know, bunch of wheelie bins. I've got a blue bin for recycling. I've got a black bin, which we call the smelly bin, for general waste. Got a green bin for garden waste, even though our garden's really small. We also have like a little small food caddy. Anyway, aside from that, our wheelie bins on the street are the only bins with our house number painted on them. Now, is that passive aggressive?
I think it, yeah. If I lived on that street, I'd be like, oh, you think I'm going to steal your bins, do you? Oh.
Do you think? We didn't, full notice here, we did not put the numbers on the bins ourselves. It was already like that when we moved in.
Oh, I can imagine you now, you're on the street, you're bringing your bins out, and a neighbour makes eye contact, and you're like, I didn't paint the numbers. What?
I don't understand why this was the only house on. Do you think the previous tenants had a run-in when it came to bins or something like that? Because...
But wait, this is, if no one has numbers on their bins,
yeah,
how would they know their bins were taken?
Well, this is it, isn't it? If I started putting a bin out with no numbers on, everyone would be like, well, he's clearly nicked someone's wheelie bin.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've had experience with bin stealing, Ben. When I lived last year, right?
Yeah.
we had numbers, and I made sure to get like super vibrant special numbers, like one rainbow, not two rainbow, because you know that was not as unique.
Mm.
One rainbow, one zebra, right? Two separate numbers. And they were stolen all the time. So I used to like run out after bin day, well, during bin day, I'd wait for the little bin man and I would run out and go and try and find my bins.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, when you got like games for PS4 and you take one out, you put it in a different case and they all move along one and none of them have the right thing in.
Mm.
So someone takes my bin and I think, well, I'm not a bin stealer, but you scratch my back, I scratch yours, I'm taking your bin.
Yeah.
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 And then finally, I think it was, we went about 5-6 weeks without our bins because whoever had our bins just wasn't bringing them out.
Ugh.
And after about 6 weeks, I saw my bin.
See, that's a whole nightmare like, situation for me.
Filled with joy to find it.
It's an absolute celebration putting the bin out every week.
Yeah, but I mean, it sounds like you're quite organised with your bins, but I mean, I think I went a good 6 months without knowing what my bin day was.
Ugh,
I would just go for the old bin alarm, which is the beep, beep, beep. And I think the fastest I run every week is to the bin.
Do you not put them up the night before then?
Well, no, because there was about 6 months where I didn't know which day was bin day.
God. No, I've got a notification on Todoist, my to-do manager, and it goes off. And I've even got it set to every other week, so I know which bin is going out that week. So it's not just a general bin day notification. It's a specific bin day notification.
I see. That, even when I found out the bin days,
right,
because we had recycling every other week, I was like, just put them both out every week.
Oh,
I
didn't have to have
extra piece of information in my head. That's pushing out something else important.
Do you not respect your bin men at all?
Right. I mean, if I have to remember that, one of my chakras might be off kilter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Who knows what can happen?
See, I don't really know what to do about the number on the wheelie bin situation. But so far, you know, I don't feel like there's too animosity on the street over it. So I think we're all right. But I just thought I'd bring that up. You know, it's quite important.
Well, I wanted to make my socially awkward escapade of the week a bit of a thing.
Yeah.
And I've had a really good one recently.
Hit me.
Okay. Right. So, new term, right? Semester 2, start of the module. We had a little ice-breaking session for the new module. I was like, cool. Computer scientists, socializing, fun. I sat down about a group of like 8 people I didn't know anyone in the module. And I was like, hey, guys, my name's Ed. What are your names?
Mm-hmm.
Silence. Nothing. And I thought, I'm not going to say it twice. So what happened was we had to like make little social networks. We were doing like, it was a module on networks. And so we needed to obviously know who was who to ask them what modules they were doing. People just didn't want to give me their names. So I wrote down numbers on pieces of paper and just slid them across to each person. And then this guy wasn't looking at me. So I was like, I made eye contact with the first person. Like, oh, what modules do you do? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, what about you? Third person wasn't looking. I was like, hey, 3. What do you do?
Called someone by a number.
I did.
Oh, Ed.
It's like that from Les Miserables.
Les Miserables.
Les Miserables.
Yeah.
I thought that's a real low point, calling someone a number.
Rewind a little bit there, though. Why weren't they telling you their name? Why?
They all heard me. They were all there. I was like, hey, guys, what's going on?
So they've just been rude then?
I was like, should we introduce ourselves? My name's Ed. And they all looked at each other a bit like, oh, what do we do?
Is it more a fact that they were socially awkward rather than you being socially awkward, do you not think?
Yeah, yeah. But, it was an awkward experience for me to be in.
But it reflects on you, doesn't it? So
The thing is, right, compared to just normal society, I am just socially inept, just terrible. But in computer science, I'm like a big name on campus.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
BNOC.
Yeah, BNOC.
How long have you got left at uni now?
Oh, too long, Ben.
Go on, hit me. How long?
Till the end of May, I think.
It's not that long.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh. I've been whoring myself out to LinkedIn, Ben.
Yeah, that's a demeaning experience as well, isn't it?
Oh, I'm really frustrated, actually, because the other day I thought, right, I need to jazz up my LinkedIn profile. I spent about half an hour Googling, what's a good LinkedIn picture? A little bit of studying, like, okay, you want to do smart casual, you know, plain background, nice little smile, not creepy.
Need a long lens.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I didn't know how to do that.
We'll sort you out, don't worry.
I specifically went home, right, 15-minute walk to go back home to take a photo, took it. It's like, yep, I'm happy with that. Put it on my LinkedIn profile. told Hattie, and she, I was like, what do you think of this? Just expecting like a nice little, oh yeah, you look lovely because you're my boyfriend and I love you. And she was like, yeah, a bit plain really. And then she said, she showed it to her work friends, and one was like, she said, don't take this the wrong way, but so-and-so says it was not very memorable, pretty unremarkable.
I think that's one of the worst comments you could get.
I was like, oh, I'd rather be like remarkable in a bad way, like, oh,
yeah,
a bit underdressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was a little bit upset.
Oh. Also, just on the topic of your LinkedIn profile picture, when the hell did you start wearing glasses?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to bring this up, right? This isn't just for LinkedIn, right?
yeah, obviously not.
Well, I went to the optician. I've been getting headaches. I went to the GP and he was just like, yeah, I think you need to go to the optician. It might be an eye thing. I was like, okay. Went to the optician. And have you been recently? Because they get this weird little machine that does puffs of air into your eyes.
Oh, like, that sounds horrible.
And she's like, oh yeah, don't worry about that. It's just blowing air in your eyes. It's like, yeah, I know. It's weird.
Okay.
Yeah, it turns out she said, oh yes, looks like you're exotropic.
Okay, what's that?
I was like, oh, what's that? And she was like, oh, it's like a squint. she's like, it's all right, you can Google it later. I was like, all right, don't know what that is. I Googled it, and it's just my... apparently, if my eyes are closed,
yeah,
or if I'm not focusing on anything, my eyes point outwards a bit. So what happened was I went home, I Googled exotropia. I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And it's just that load of people just cross-eyed as hell.
Oh, Ed.
So my vision itself is fine. Like, I can focus on everything, like not nearsighted. But yeah, if you cover one eye, it just off over somewhere else.
So have you got like really low prescription glasses then?
Yeah, she basically said they'll just kind of angle my eyes inwards a bit.
This all sounds very hands in the air. I don't know.
What do you mean?
She's just like, yeah, you know, your eyes might start floating back in a bit. It'll be all right. She just seems to be making up as she goes along.
Well, basically, right, I'm getting headaches because my eyes are having to move further to look at things nearby than yours. So yours just moving a little bit, like, but mine are like, well, we've got to come all the way from opposite ends of the head.
So last week, Ed, as you well know, I went skiing in the French Alps.
Very jealous. Very jealous.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. We try to go skiing every year because we love skiing, but I think as I get older, the novelty of traveling just has completely worn off, and it just becomes an absolute ordeal.
So what annoys you about travel?
Okay, so the journey out was 10 legs, okay? 10 legs, 10 different bits of transport just to get there.
How many different modes of transport?
Okay, so I'll run you through them all, okay? Because, you know, I'll give you that pleasure.
Thank you very much.
So the first leg was we drove the car from our house to Manchester Airport to park.
That's right. Fairly standard.
Yeah,
fairly
that's standard fine. Leg. Nothing strange so far. Then we got the shuttle bus from the car park to the airport, number two. Number three, we got the aeroplane, obviously, to Geneva Airport. Number four, okay, I think I've missed some already, but... Number four, we got a shuttle bus from the plane to the airport. So it wasn't even a gate. We had to get the, you know, you get the little bendy bus or whatever it is. So we got that. And then we got on the train to Geneva. And then we got on another train to another train station in France.
Trains definitely go between stations.
Yep. And then we got, this is what I'm saying though. We got on a different train.
Right.
Yeah. And then we got on another train, which was meant to go to Borg Saint-Maurice. But
is that in the Alps?
Yeah, that's just at the foot of Le Arc, which is where we went skiing. And then...
You got a leg to the foot.
Yeah, exactly. And then at which point we were meant to just go straight to the train station, get the funicular. You know what a funicular is?
Cable car?
Kind of. It's like a little train which goes up and down really steep inclines, and they're usually counterweighted with another train. We were meant to just get the funicular up and then another shuttle bus. But in the end, what happened was when the train got into Borg Saint-Maurice, it there was some signal failure and we were going to have to wait 4 hours until the train could start going again. So we had to get on a coach, which took it up to 10. We're at number 10. We're at number 10.
What was the time from point A to point B?
So we got up at 3 in the morning and we got in at about 9:30.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is, yeah. Yeah.
And it's only France as well. That's the thing. It's only France. It shouldn't be that long, should it?
What if you took the Euro?
The Eurostar, you got to get down to London then, and it's a whole thing, and it costs a lot more, but it does get you straight into Bourg Saint-Maurice. But you got to get to London, and London, getting into London's not easy by itself.
Nah, I mean, like, half the journey is while you're in London.
Yeah, but I was reflecting a little bit when I was throughout this whole ordeal that I realised that was incredibly mundane to actually go through. But, you know, when you're a kid, travelling isn't so bad, but I realised that's because your parents carry you through the whole ordeal. You know, you just sat there. You don't even carry your luggage. You don't care about your passport. You don't care about your tickets.
Yeah, you just follow instructions. Yeah. Like, come on, off we go.
You're just walking along with your head in your Game Boy, and the whole thing just passes you by really quickly. But when you're older, you've got to be actively involved in every situation. So, like, when the train broke down, you have to be trying to decipher the French to understand what the hell's going on. There's 3,000 people in the station. Where do we go?
God, yeah.
And it's just a nightmare. And
trying to buy little train tickets on those machines in a different language.
Yeah. And people, when they're traveling, are just the worst, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, they've got zero sort of self-awareness for what they're doing.
And children in airports.
Yeah. Airports are the worst as well. Airports, I mean, they just make up the rules as they go along when it comes to airport security, right?
What experiences have you had?
So on the way out, in airport security, we had to do the whole rigmarole of taking your shoes off, your belt off. You have to take your laptop out. You have to take your tablet out. You have to take your Kindle out and put it in separate things. And I've got a bit of a gripe with people in airport security because they order you around and they never say please or thank you. And I find that really rude. And another guy was like, on the other side was, so I took my stuff out the basket and he said, oh, put the baskets back over there. And I was like, I can't remember getting paid by airport security to do this job. So I'm not going to do that. You do that. You're the one getting paid here.
What did you do? Did you just leave it?
I just walked away. But at the end of the day, because, you know, if he just said, oh, could you just put the basket in there, please? I'd have been like, oh, yeah, cool. No bother. But it's the fact that he was like, you got to put your baskets in there. I was like, no, you can do that. Yeah. You're getting paid to do this. You're getting paid to inconvenience me here. I'm not going to say thanks for any of this.
You see, I get annoyed for a totally different kind of reason. I kind of go along with the system, and then I get annoyed when people don't follow the system. So it says, like, you know when you put your trays come through, and it says, like, unpack your trays over here. So I pick up my tray to go over, but, like, people are in the way because they're unpacking there. And I'm like, excuse me, you're supposed to unpack your trays over here.
Yeah. And then also, so they have all these signs up saying, get your tablets, Kindles, and all that stuff out. But they don't mention Bluetooth speakers. So then the guy at the other end, and they always treat you like an absolute criminal, like they're actually going to find a bomb in the bag. They're never going to find a bomb in the bag. You know what I mean? Mm. But anyway, so I left my Bluetooth speaker in my bag, and he's like, so you got a Bluetooth speaker in here then? And I was like, yeah.
Wasn't on your list, was it?
Yeah, it was a Bluetooth speaker. And then he's like, right, well, I'm going to have to look through the whole thing. And I was like, well, you clearly know it's a Bluetooth speaker, because before you've even opened the bag, you've said it's a Bluetooth speaker.
You've given him a ticket, Ben.
Oh, so I was just like, so he looks through the whole thing. And then he gives me the bag back. And they've kind of got that look on their face. Like, they're expecting me to say, oh, thank you very much. I don't say thank you. Why would I say thank you for you inconveniencing me?
For looking through my pants. Well, I'm sure, like, most security staff are fine, but there's going to be some of them who just enjoy the power.
Mm. Yeah.
And they see you'd left your Bluetooth speaker, and they're like, oh,
yeah,
brilliant. I'm going to have a look through all of these.
I think it's the librarian thing that, you know, these kids who never got to be higher in the pecking order than any of the other kids at school, they go on to become librarians so they can tell other children off.
Yeah.
That's my theory anyway.
But the nerds are in charge now.
Yeah. And then they had to look through Chloe's bag for something as well. Chloe obviously wasn't very happy about it because she doesn't like people rummaging through her stuff. So she stood there in front of this guy, kind of like blank-faced. And the guy was like, you're not having a good day, miss? And it was like, don't talk to me like that, for one. And two, it's none of your business. And they always try to make, like, small talk, like, oh, so where are you off to? You going skiing? And it's like, yep, skiing. Where are you going? France.
What you should have done is you get your little mood app out and just put awful in front of them.
That might send a message, but
yeah. And then there's little, you know, there's little kiosks they have. Like, how was your experience today? Just walk, like, maintain eye contact, walk over, look at him, and just press it.
Actually, on the way out, Chloe did do that. She walked past one and she kept hammering the really bad button. But also on the way back home, so when we got the flight back, we're flying with EasyJet, which is okay. Every single flight in Geneva Airport on the way back was delayed massively. So our airport, our flight was as well. I think we ended up being delayed by about 2 hours. So it's the second richest country on the planet, and there was just absolutely no seating whatsoever in this airport. Massive queues at passport control. It was a total nightmare. And then we got out, and then we finally got on the plane. We got to the other side, Manchester Airport. Got to the little carousel for our bags to come out. And the bags didn't come out for a whole hour, 10 minutes.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah.
But just to add insult to injury, right? As soon as we got to the conveyor, straight off the plane, to the conveyor, they sent out like 5 bags.
Oh, they tease you, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they teased us.
Again, it's like, oh, yeah, we'll send out 4 and they'll get a flavour for it.
But what happened there? The only theory I've got on what must have happened is the baggage staff came, they unloaded the plane, they sent out 4 bags, and then they looked at their watch and thought, right, well, it's actually our break time now, so we get an hour off now. And then they just sacked it mid-job. So we had to wait for an hour.
I don't know, see, I think there's a difference between you and me. I assume there's an absolutely fine, legitimate reason. I think, oh, they've had need to refuel the luggage lorry.
Does that take an hour, does it? And, you know, you've got no one to complain to. What was really funny, though, over the Tannoy system, they had the guy put out an announcement saying, EasyJet passengers, a quick announcement, your bags will be arriving shortly. And then about 5 minutes later, he did another announcement for another flight which had just come in, which was Emirates, which is obviously quite a, if people don't know, it's quite a high-end airline, let's say. And it was the same guy, and they just got off their flight maybe 10 minutes ago, and the same guy said the announcement, which was exactly the same as ours, but worded much differently. It was something like, Emirates Airlines would like to sincerely apologise to its customers just coming off flight, whatever. Your bags will arrive very shortly. We will keep you updated. Sorry for any inconvenience. So to the EasyJet passengers, it was, yeah, your bags are coming. Wait there, sheep. And to the Emirates customers, it was, yeah, they're coming. We're so sorry.
That's what you pay for, Ben.
Well, yeah, evidently.
See, this is the thing. If you hate travel, you just got to, like, buy expensive tickets.
Yeah, this is what we were thinking about as well. Is it worth spending the extra couple of hundred quid here and there?
Like British Airways, you might wait longer, but you get nice food. And you get to wait in the British Airways lounge.
Oh, no, British Airways is just another airline now, though, Ed. It's no good.
Is it not special?
It's completely lost its way. Once upon a time, it was like the one. It was British Airways. There was no messing with it. But now it's exactly the same as EasyJet. The seats are tiny. The aircraft are particularly dingy and haven't been updated in ages. And it's just the same as any other low-cost carrier. It's all changed,
That's
Ed.
That's a shame.
But yeah, travel in general, I've completely lost the will to live with it.
I wanted to tell you about, I flew down to Cornwall, where my dad lives.
Oh yeah, we nearly crossed paths for a short amount of time, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think I got to Manchester Airport about an hour or two after you left.
Yeah.
Bit of serendipity.
Yeah, what, serendipity that we didn't see each other?
Yeah, serendipity that we just missed each other, yeah. But I was on a flight and I was next to this woman. She didn't say a word to me the whole trip. We're about to land, and she clearly got really nervous and just turns to me, like, bolt-eyed, like, so what are you going to Cornwall for?
Oh, God.
It's like, oh, I'm... And I was just, like, quite relaxed. Oh, I'm just going to see my dad. Oh, really? And how long has he lived here for? She's, like, just desperately trying to distract herself.
Poor woman. That's nasty.
So I was getting panicked, too, like, oh, God, I've got to distract her with my answers. Like, yeah, he's been here for a while in the holiday homes.
You're trying to be particularly eloquent and flowery with your language.
Yeah. Yes, been here. He's had a nice long career in...
I'd have watched her writhe around a bit. I'd have been like, yep, got to Cornwall. Should be all right. Yep.
Yep. And actually, she's just like shouting to someone across the aisle, like, you, sir, what are you here for?
Actually, on the way out, I was sat in the middle seat and Chloe was on my right and the woman on my left was not respecting the rules and giving me the armrest. How bad is that?
Oh.
If you're in the middle, you've got both armrests. It's all you've got to your name.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like left side, easy wee.
Yep.
Right side, window.
Yep.
Middle, you're like, well, yeah, armrests. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally agree there.
Also, on the way out, there was some guy sat behind us. And if you weren't to turn around, you would think they were like some teenage boys just making really, really bad, unfunny jokes to one another. That's my preface to this. Yeah. Because I made a joke to Chloe. We seemed to be taxiing for a long time. And I always make the same joke to Chloe. I always say, oh, it looks like we're driving there. Okay? Rubbish joke. Never, ever gets a laugh, but I'm going to persist with it. Anyway, literally 2 minutes after I said it, the guys, the unfunny guys behind me, one of them repeated my joke verbatim.
Did he get more laughs? Oh,
no, I don't think he got a laugh at all. They weren't laughing at each other's jokes as well. They were trying to be funny. They sounded like they were trying to almost do like a sketch show, but no one was laughing at anyone's jokes. It was just annoying.
Were they saying it at a volume like they want the plane to hit?
Yeah, they were trying to broadcast to 2 or 3 aisles, I think.
Damn it. They're the worst. Oh, yes, right. I wanted to ask you. I've been having an argument with several people, and I've lost with all of them.
Yeah.
I think I'm having a crisis, okay? So if I was in an accident, right, and the news is referring to me, would it say young man in accident or man? Ben.
Why is this important?
I am a young man.
Okay, who first of all, before I give my answer, who have you been discussing this with?
Too many people.
And what's the overall consensus?
Well,
it's not going to sway my answer.
It hasn't gone my way. But let me just nuance it a bit, right? Just to extend it, I think if I was the perpetrator of a crime, I would be man. If I was a victim, I'd be young man, because they want to, encourage sympathy. Yeah. So I want to know what your opinion is. Right? I'm 26 years old now.
Yeah. I don't feel like if you were to log on to BBC News, which I haven't done in a long time, but I don't feel like they'd distinguish the fact that you're a young man. I think BBC News, you're either an infant, a teen... No, maybe not a teen, though. An adolescent?
Boy?
A boy or a girl. They probably go with boy or girl.
Yeah.
Or man or woman. I don't think they have the...
Right, but if they were going to use the word young man...
Yeah.
Would it apply to me?
So in this hypothetical situation where the news does describe people as being young men or young women...
They do, yeah. They're just like, young man falls off cliff.
I don't think they do, though. They just say man, don't they?
Or student.
I'm sorry, Ed. They're going to say man. They're going to say man.
Okay. I guess I'm in that stage of my life.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah, got to take responsibility for myself.
It was your birthday, actually, wasn't it, in January? Is that why you were talking about this with people?
Yeah, yeah. Because I was like, oh, 26, that's like, can't get a rail card now.
How old were we when we met?
Must be 18, you were 19.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, dear.
We're getting old, Ed. We're getting old. How do you know... Have you come across any, like, telltale signs that you're getting old yet?
Oh, yeah. I tell you what. Biggest indication that I'm old is that I enjoy the whole of the Argos catalogue now. I used to just enjoy those 20 pages at the back, and I was like, there is no way I'm going to look at a rug and be like, ooh, that looks nice. But I do. You know, IKEA. Take me to IKEA any day. I'll have a field day.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think there's certain aspects of social media which really just pass me by now, and I don't really care. Before, I'd try and understand all of the things that get talked about.
Memes or
Trends? Yeah, kind of memes. I don't like. Once upon a time, I'd be up on my memes, let's say, but now,
be up on my memes.
I feel old just saying that, but yeah, I can't keep up with internet culture quite as fast or as efficiently as I used to. Let's say. I don't really care about it as much either.
It's not a bad thing to not do that. Well, that's one thing. I mean, when I was like 18, I thought to myself, one day I'm not going to enjoy clubbing, and that'll be really sad. But now that I don't enjoy clubbing that much, it's like, well, I don't actually want to do it. It's not that I'm not able to. It's just not fun anymore. So it's like, I think you get sad about getting old because you're looking at it from the perspective of being young. And there definitely will be things which will be sad that you won't be able to do, but a lot of it, it's just different because you just enjoy different things.
Yeah, that's what we tell ourselves every day. I don't know if there's it's as much I miss about being young. I mean, you know, your early 20s is probably your prime. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I think I disagree. Like, do you mean in terms of, like, physical fitness or...?
No, but probably it's, like, overall future potential, let's say.
Oh, in terms of potential?
Because you've got so much... Yeah, because you've got so much time ahead of you when you're in your early 20s.
You can make mistakes, yeah.
Yeah, and you've still got, like, you know, if you've completely messed things up and you're 22, people are like, well, you're only 22, but the closer you get to your 30s, people are like, you kind of need to start establishing yourself as something.
Yeah. But I don't think that means, I don't know if that means you're in your prime, because I think your prime to me is, like, just your well-being, like your fitness, mental health, physical health, yeah.
Yeah, I probably agree with you there. And it's not potentially your prime, it's more that, If you were to graph potential future at any age, I think you kind of decrease from the age of 20 something onwards.
Yeah. Options close off to you. Like I think I can't be a helicopter pilot now in the army.
Well, you have to
get in before you're 25, I think.
Yeah.
Because I mean I don't know if you ever do this, but I would look at people like Justin Bieber's a very young music artist, and I think like. When I was like, let's say someone who's like 24 when I was like 18, and I think to myself, I don't want to be a music artist, but there's a small possibility I could still be by that age. But now you're like past that age, you're like, oh, I'm not going to be a famous musician anymore.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's always like that, the dream dies as you get older a little bit, doesn't it? It's like, you know, when you're really young, you're like, well, I could be an astronaut. I still could be an astronaut. Yeah, you probably know to yourself that you're not going to be one, but you could be. But you get to a certain age and you're like, no, I'm never going to be an astronaut now. I try not to look like what you've just said there. I try not to look at other successful people that I follow and how old they are, because it can be very, it can be very bad for your morale when you see someone who's like really high up in a company somewhere making massive changes to the world and they're the same age as you and you're like, oh dear.
Yeah, yeah. Like a startup. But then I think I really admire people who respect those younger than them. So, you know, someone who's older, who's willing to learn from a younger person who's been very successful, I think that's like a very valuable thing.
Yeah. It is easy to look at them as well and go, oh, this is just bound to fail because they haven't got life experience.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's rationalizing it, because it's difficult for you to accept that someone is in the same, have the same sort of opportunities given to them and they're doing very, very well. It's difficult, isn't it? Because you're like, oh, yeah. Should I be doing that? But I think a lot of it is luck. It's like any successful person is very talented, plus they've had a healthy amount of luck.
Yeah.
I think most of them acknowledge that.
A lot of the people you do see who are, at least at the moment, because we're still relatively young, a lot of the people who are really high up or really, really successful at a young age, it's important to look at them, you're right, that they're lucky and also they're on the far end of the bell curve. And if you were to actually sample the real population of people your age, when you're young at least, a lot of them are going to be on the exact same peg as you, you know, either struggling or doing okay.
Like, I read a really good book called Siddhartha, and this guy basically wants to try and reach the pinnacle of spiritual enlightenment. He tries various different disciplines, you know, tries Hinduism, tries Buddhism, kind of gets to the top of each of these things, of his practice, and doesn't really find what he's looking for.
Mm.
Comes across this ferryman, and the ferryman just, you know, takes this raft from one side of the river to the other, transports people across, and he realizes this guy is totally enlightened, and he's kind of realized the nature of reality. Whether or not you believe in that, you know, this guy kind of had it all sorted out. And he said he learned everything he knew from the water and from the river. And the guy realized that it doesn't matter what you do, you know, approaching it with that philosophy, with the right philosophy, will get you to where you want to go. So I think, like, doesn't matter what profession you choose, as long as you totally commit yourself to the one that you're doing. And, you know, I think part of growing up is realizing, and it's not to say you shouldn't be ambitious, but I think part of growing up is realizing that, you know, being happy is about doing your best at something, and it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's one of those common tropes where people just say, oh, just commit yourself fully to one thing and eventually someone will see you for what you're worth. I just don't think it's true. Especially, it's just a numbers game now as well. There's so many people out there.
What I mean is, if you're going to be if let's say, you know, you were a cleaner and you really wanted to be a writer and you were really struggling to get that opportunity to be a writer, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try your hardest to doing the best job you can do as a cleaner. Because I think it just, if you try hard and take pride in your work, like, you're always much happier, even if it's not what you want to do. Like, I did it when I worked in a bar, you know, making cocktails wasn't what I wanted to do, but, you know, I took a lot of pride in, like, making really good cocktails and getting good at it, and I enjoyed it much more, even though I wasn't really in charge of, you know, I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I've got a system with my pants. And I want to know if you think it's a good idea.
Okay, I'm listening.
I know this is the kind of thing you enjoy.
You have my whole attention.
Yeah. Right, so Hattie doesn't understand this. I have two pairs of ugly pants in my drawers.
Yeah.
And she's like, why do you have those pants? And I say, it's because I hate wearing those pants because they look terrible. Stripy boys. So I avoid wearing them. So I'll look for other pants. I'll keep wearing other pants. And eventually I'll have no pants left but these ugly pants. And I think, right, I need to do a wash.
They're motivation pants then?
Yeah, they're like backup pants.
Yeah.
Emergency pants. And if all my pants were nice, there's nothing to distinguish them. I wouldn't know when I get to the end of the pile. So I'd be looking for pants and I'd be like, oh, there's none left. But if the ugly pants are in there and I'm wearing the ugly pants, I know it's time to do a wash.
Yeah, so you've basically got two pair. You're going to wear one and then you're going to realise that the other one is the only one you've got left.
Yeah.
And that's when action is required.
Yeah, and the second pair of emergency pants is a bit of a buffer because you're not always able to do a load in a day.
Or dry it out, for that matter.
So do you think that's a good system? Because she was just like, yeah, but what? Those pants are horrible.
I'm totally on board. Yeah, that's fine by me. You've got my full blessing there.
Are you going to do the same system, or have you got enough pants that you don't have to worry about?
See, recently I threw all mine out and got new ones because I had a similar complaint, you see. So,
but how are you going to find some ugly pants to buy?
I do have two pair left, like you, but they're not as bad as you're describing yours as. So,
yeah, mine are like pink and purple stripes.
Oh yeah, see, gotta be careful with light colours on underwear.
Mm. I call them the "I'm not having sex with you" pants. Yeah,
sends a message, does it?
No, I mean, no. It, that's from Hattie.
All right. So Ed, recently, everyone has watched it at this point. It came out on Christmas Eve, Boxing Day, one of the two. Bandersnatch on Netflix. Have you watched it?
Yeah, really awesome.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Oh, you didn't? You weren't a fan?
I thought it was average. Okay, so you talk about why you think it's so great at first. And now I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Okay. Two reasons. One, the format is brilliant. A really, really clever idea. And I thought it was executed very well, because I think you could do that really poorly. Oh, yeah, so just for people who haven't seen it, it's a bit like Choose Your Own Adventure, but with a movie, with Netflix. So they present you with options. Ooh. Sorry. My watch is ringing, but I can't stop it.
What a 21st century problem that is.
Right, well, just let that ring out. You get presented with several options. You choose one of the screens that will say, which cereal do you want to eat today? And a lot of them will have implications later. It decides your adventure. I also thought the acting was very good.
Yeah.
And I thought the storyline was really good.
Okay.
What didn't you like about it?
Well, so Choose Your Own Adventure isn't really like a novel concept. I mean, yeah, it hasn't been done by Netflix, but it has been done to death in the past in books, and it's also been done quite a lot in video games as well.
Yeah.
Which was all very meta as well, but I'll get onto that in a minute.
That's brilliant. That's the good thing.
Yeah. So did you also play out all of the different endings?
Oh, yeah. I had to get really annoyed because I was like, oh, we've got to see the other endings.
Yeah. So the one thing that kind of annoyed me. So on the very first playthrough, Chloe and I basically decided to make all of the wrong decisions. Actually, just before I start, it was phenomenally difficult for us to watch this for some reason. So we've got a Chromecast and a Fire Stick, and we've got our tablets and whatnot, and it just, none of it seemed to work.
Yeah, some of them aren't enabled, are they?
Yeah, we had to cast it from a tab, which was infuriating for a good half hour. But anyway, we got it to work. So Chloe and I decided that we would make all of the worst decisions possible for our main character, because that's just the kind of people we are. So we thought, well, originally when I watched it through the first time, we made the decision to work at home, because we thought, right, this guy's going to go absolutely nuts if he works at home. We're definitely working at home. So we did that. And I was quite amazed the first, you know, I want to say playthrough, but it's not a playthrough, is it? First watch, that they had such a fleshed out story for the guy working at home. There were so many paths coming off this guy, the guy working at home.
Yeah.
And then we went back and after we finished it, and we took the option to work at the company rather than work at home. And the guy just patched you on the shoulder and was like, "Nah, wrong choice, mate." And it's like, right, okay. So what originally appeared to be quite phenomenal and massive in scale, actually it's not. There's this illusion of choice that for a lot of the big decisions where you can either do it or you can't. But actually...
But I would say, I got like two responses to that. I think one is that they're aware of it, so they make a reference to it. There's like the illusion of choice. And also, logistically, it's impossible. You know, talk about in computer science, combinatorial explosion. It's not many decisions before you have a ridiculous number of things to film.
Yeah.
And I imagine it's pretty ambitious what they did already. So I think having many closed off branches is good. And I think if you went down a branch too far, like for too long, and it was wrong, it's a little bit too, I think a lot of people give up because they think, oh, I'm never going to find the right way.
Yeah. That's another thing, is that the quality of what you get out of this, it depends on which path you take. And that's always been the thing with like choose your own adventures and video games in general as well. Whenever you're presented with a choice, you know, do you go left or right? A lot of people are just paralyzed by choice and they've got to try both. So that kills a lot of it for me as well, is that the completionist sense in my brain that, okay, well, I'm doing this decision now, but I've got to remember to do that in a different way the next time through we go, because I need to know what's on the other end of it.
They do auto-select the other option, though.
Yeah, which kind of gives a lot away as well, where, I can't remember which bit it was, but once you've finished it, it resets you to a certain position in the story, which kind of says, basically, all the stuff before this point doesn't really mean much. I think it's where he's in his... when he's in his room working on it or something like that. And
but I think part of the issue, they want to show you a complete piece. They want to kind of show you as much as possible.
Yeah.
And they're trying to kind of push you down that, because it needs to be like an entertaining experience at the end of the day. I think for the first sort of thing in this new genre, I thought it was really good.
I think it was very ambitious, and I didn't hate it. I just thought it was quite average. I think it was quite middling. Another thing is as well, with Black Mirror, they tend to have some sort of moral to the story, or at least it's a plausible story for a future civilization, like another. It presents an issue that we might face, let's say. And this just seemed to be, I don't know what the point of the story was. What was the message that you take away from it? I mean,
yeah,
I didn't really get it. This guy was crazy, or...
I consider it to be quite separate to the rest of the Black Mirror things.
Yeah, it almost could have been released as something else.
I think it was more of an opportunity, like... Charlie Brooker had this good idea and thought, you know, Black Mirror's got a lovely following. I tell you what, me and Hattie were taking it in turns to make decisions. So I was like, you know, hand the remote to her, I make decisions, then to her, then back to me. But I wanted to sort of like kick things up a notch, go a bit mental. And so, but Hattie wanted to play it safe. So they'd be like, oh, should you take the pills or not? And Hattie was like, yeah, that's what the doctor said. You got to take your pills. And then we'd be in the psychologist's office and it would be like... Basically, yeah, I was like, yeah, let's have a fight with the psychologist.
Yeah, it gets very meta at that point, though, doesn't it? It even mentions Netflix and stuff like that. And I was a bit like, oh, come on, guys.
Oh, but I love that. I love breaking the fourth wall.
It was a bit much for me, that. It was a bit much. And one of the options is even just the word Netflix. And it's like, oh, God, way to take us out of this. We know we're watching it on Netflix. You don't need to point it out in the bloody thing we're watching.
I got a bit concerned at myself, like enjoying the power. So when he was like, what are you doing? Why are you controlling me? I was like, yes.
It does lead me on to another thing. So you mentioned it, that this is a good first attempt. So does that mean you think there's going to be more attempts?
I reckon it was probably an absolute nightmare to film and make.
Yeah. And to program as well.
Because it's a novelty. Loads of people will watch this. I think if they were to do it again, a combination of not being a novelty anymore and being really logistically difficult, I don't think it'll happen again.
At all?
I think if it does, it won't be as good.
Or it could be a lot simpler, or maybe episodic. I don't know. Also, just on the greater Black Mirror topic, how much of it have you watched?
All of it.
Oh, yeah. You watched all of it. So I've missed a few episodes from the latest season, which I think is season 4, I want to say.
It's still really, really good.
I think it's lost its teeth.
Yeah, but I think it's just a, you know, there's only so many good ideas in one person, isn't there?
Because if you watch the pilot episode, that is Charlie Brooker all over it. That is, it's horrible to watch. It's really uncomfortable to watch. It's, oh.
Yeah.
And yet, as the season's gone on and as Netflix acquired it and it arguably, you know, it was catered more towards an American audience where classically American audiences have preferred happier endings, let's say. It just seems to have lost its teeth a little bit.
So there's two episodes of the most recent bunch that are, like, up there in quality.
Are we talking about the guy with the blackmail video?
I was thinking the Black Museum.
Oh, yeah, we watched that one. It was a bit goofy, though, wasn't it?
And the blackmail video, yeah.
Yeah, we did watch... The Black Museum's a good one. The blackmail one's really... Yeah, that made us feel a bit ill at the end, let's say.
Yeah.
But I think on the whole, if you watch back some of the older episodes, like... Was it A Million Merits and is it The Whole History of You or the one where they've got the little implant in their eyes so they can replay events? A lot of them just make you feel like really quite nauseous as you watch them, and it's really uncomfortable TV, but it's very compelling. And I just think some of the newer stuff's a bit obvious. Like the episode where they were rating people out of 5, it's like, oh yeah, I kind of get it, right, okay, I get the point.
I really enjoyed that one.
It just felt like, it just didn't feel like it had teeth, and it didn't feel like... What I like from a Black Mirror episode is to come out the other side feeling just horrendous about society and the way it's going. and when I finished that one, I was just like, yeah, she at the end, she was just kind of happy with not having a 5-star rating. She just kind of resigned herself to the fact. So,
do you think they could have done that particular concept better, or you just thought the concept as itself wasn't that good?
Yeah, I think maybe if Charlie Brooker was completely let off his leash, which I feel like he is on a short leash now he's with Netflix. Although, I don't know, maybe he's not. Maybe he's just a difference in writing teams and whatnot, because it's probably not all him. But I feel like, yeah, if Charlie Brooker was at 100% Charlie Brooker, it probably would have made you feeling a lot less comfortable about things. There'd have been some sort of sick thing thrown in that as a result of not having a good star rating or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just feel like as the seasons go on, but it's the same with any show, really. As the seasons go on, I kind of lose interest a little bit.
Well, we'll see what the next season has to bring.
Yeah, but Bandersnatch out of 10, maybe a 6, probably just over average.
I'd say like 8.
Yeah. Have you watched anything else good on Netflix recently?
Sex Education.
I've heard that's absolute crap.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard really bad reviews of it, but maybe they're wrong, I don't know.
I really enjoyed it. I wouldn't necessarily say it's like critically acclaimed sort of thing.
I saw a review on Twitter which said it's 10,000 times less funny than Peep Show or something like that. That was the review in a sentence.
Well, I just enjoy, like, you know, nice coming of age movies. Yeah.
I watched the Ted Bundy tapes.
Are they good?
Do you know much about him?
Serial killer?
Serial killer in America, yeah. If you don't know much about him, it's probably a good watch. It's just, they kind of glorify him quite a lot. Like, every single description of him is like, he was a very handsome man, he was very devious, he was very clever. And he's like, no, he killed 30 women. He was an absolute scumbag. Jeez. Why are we... I don't know, it's this morbid curiosity, isn't it? Which all true crime content follows, where...
Yeah.
If you don't kind of glorify the person that you're doing... a documentary or a piece of media on, what's the point in doing it in the first place? But it leaves you feeling very strange about the whole thing.
Yeah, Narcos was a bit the same. It's like showing how impressive it was that this guy built his empire, but at the same time showing all the terrible stuff he did.
So at the end of every episode, what we should do is we take turns, and what we do is we have to come up with our top 5 of something for the next episode, and we compare.
I was thinking that, yeah.
So I want to come up with the first one, because Chloe and I were discussing this on a ski lift in France. Okay, so our homework for next week, Ed.
Yeah.
Top 5 breakfast cereals.
I think they should be intentionally mundane, but then we'll try and make it entertaining.
So yeah, top 5 breakfast cereals. Next week, we'll discuss it.